Up next, Authentically Detroit welcomes back Rick Sperling and Nafisa Simonette of Detroit Excellence in Youth Arts to discuss the Launch Awards, which offer a boost for creative youth in the city. But first, this week's hot takes from Bridge Detroit and the Detroit Free Press. Fake social media rendering of Detroit signs set expectations too high, Duggan says. And treat our residents with respect. Detroit Ordinance looks to tackle fugitive dust. Keep it locked. Authentically Detroit starts after these messages.
Founded in 2021, the Stoudemire is a membership-based community recreation and wellness center centrally located on the east side of Detroit. Membership in the Stoudemire is available on a sliding scale for up to $20 per year or 20 hours of volunteer time. The Stoudemire offers art, dance, and fitness classes, community meetings and events, resource fairs, pop-up events, the Neighborhood Tech Hub, and more. Members who are residents of the east side have access to exclusive services in the Wellness Network. Join today and live well, play well, be well. Visit ecndetroit.org.
Hello, Detroit and the world. Welcome to another episode of Authentically Detroit, broadcasting live from Detroit's East Side at the Stoudemire inside of the East Side Community Network. We are a content partner to BridgeDetroit.com. I'm Orlando Bailey.
And I'm Donna Givens-Davidson.
Thank you for listening in and supporting our efforts to build a platform of authentic voices for real people in the city of Detroit. We want you to like, rate, and subscribe to our podcast on all platforms. We are back at our studio inside of the Stoudemire this week because Vaulted Youth Voice Voices is back this week as well. Along with the youth, we're joined today by Rick Sperling and Nafisa Simonette of Detroit Excellence in Youth Arts. We figured this would be a perfect opportunity to let our listeners know about the Launch Award microgrants, which support young artists in the city of Detroit, especially young people, right? So for the first time, the legend that is Rick Sperling. I get to say welcome to Authentically Detroit. Oh,
thank you, Orlando and Donna. Thrilled to be here and with my partner in crime, Nafisa Simonette.
Yes.
I should say new member of the Michigan Arts and Cultural Council.
I am.
All right. So there's a couple legends sitting over here.
Yeah. How y'all feeling today? How does it feel to be here?
Good. It feels great. Yeah. It feels great to be here, actually.
Yeah. Sun shining outside.
It is. And we're coming off of a week-long conference in Washington, D.C., and learned a lot and convened with, you know, folks who are doing the work that we're doing. So we're feeling empowered and...
And not alone, right?
And not alone.
Because sometimes we do this work and we feel like we're on the island.
Very much so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There is a national, international movement to make youth arts equitable and accessible and inclusive. So,
a conversation with the Kennedy Center, they said arts education is a civil rights issue.
And I love that.
I know, I did too.
I love that.
That's so cool. Incredible.
And it's incredible in so many ways. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had a Show Me the Money fair here on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when people say they believe in youth arts, show me the money, right? Where is the money for that in our community? I'm not talking about the foundation community. I'm talking about the city itself. We don't have a youth department. We don't really invest in youth arts. There are some really amazing people who are still making it happen.
Yep.
It's crazy how it happens, but it would be so wonderful if there was actually a department. So I'm interested in hearing from you. We talked a little bit before now about how Detroit compares to other places in terms of arts investments. And I'm interested in hearing what that looks like.
Absolutely. Well, we've learned a lot over the years. I think that there's great work happening in Chicago, in Houston, in Boston.
Newark.
Newark, New Jersey. Different places around the country. But I think that people are surprised that Detroit does not have more support for youth arts, considering that we are the home of the sound of young America.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we don't, but then we have people like you who certainly you have created something that is going to last forever, and that's Mosaic Youth Theater. And you are actually the person who trained in high school, D'Arri, from Detroit.
That's right.
And so, you know, I
that's
think...
That's so fun. Rick, you know, I think listeners are surprised to hear your voice because I don't know if everybody knows you're still working and doing stuff. People probably think you retired and went to the convalescent home. What's going on, Rick?
I officially retired from Mosaic in 2019 and turned over the baton, the reins to... De La Shea Strotter, another wonderful Detroit School of the Arts grad, who's doing a fantastic job running Mosaic. But I didn't retire from focusing on Detroit youth arts. I went to be a consultant to Dr. Vitti at the Detroit Public Schools for 3.5 years. It was supposed to be 3 years, and then the pandemic happened. And now I'm thrilled to be co-launching with Nafisa this this new initiative called DEA, Detroit Excellence in Youth Arts. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we've been doing the work. I think that that it's strange. I mean, I think sometimes people expect that DEA is going to be Mosaic 2.0 or that it's about, you know, creating something new in terms of youth arts. It's really not that. Mm-hmm. We have great organizations. You know, Mosaic is just one of them.
Yeah.
They're, you know, Inside Out, Living Arts, Heritage Works.
Teen Hype.
Teen Hype, Crescendo Detroit. I could go on and on and on. We actually have, when we look at other sectors, an incredibly powerful sector.
Yeah.
In terms of the organizations doing the work. So Nafisa and I never see it as our role to give more programmatically. What we saw were gaps. In my experience at Mosaic in the last years, Nafisa's experience in the classroom, me with DPSCD, things where young people are not getting the opportunities they should be getting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's safe to say that you didn't step down, you elevated, right?
Thank you.
Because now you're giving out money. And are contributing grants, and so that's a whole different role for you. Mm-hmm. I know we're going to get into that a little bit later, I'm really excited to dig in and learn more about what DEA is and talk about how you see your current work impacting this arts community that definitely needs more resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can't wait to talk about it, especially around building up a solid arts economy in the state of Michigan. Oh. Because in order to be an artist, I think people feel like they got to go somewhere else to do that here, because we love cars and battery plants and stuff like that.
We invest in them. Where's our film credits? Okay?
That's right.
We'll
talk about it a little later.
How many credits do we get put into these, you know, automotive factories, right, but not the film credits, because those don't work.
Yeah.
I think it's important to acknowledge the fact that DEA really is looking at how we support both out-of-school time arts, youth arts organizations, and classroom educators, arts educators. And so this is why Rick and I's partnership works so well. So my background is in arts education. So I started my art career here in Detroit as an 8-year-old, a part of Young Artists and Company Incorporated. And if you're as
Young
old
Artists
as
and Company,
Young Artists
in Highland
and Company,
Park.
I think the original.
Did you know Kevin Davidson?
Yep,
that's my husband.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I love this moment.
He loves to talk about young artists the time. Yes.
Oh, my God. I reached my sound just
keep going.
Mine did too.
I reached out to him like some years ago. Somebody can. I think I found him on LinkedIn.
Well, I'm going to make sure that you guys connect. He will be so happy to hear from you. So always so excited to hear from his students.
I think he taught me pastels and charcoal.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Mrs. Ivory, Joyce Ivory, the founder of Young Artists Incorporated. She was my first arts educator, and he was a teaching artist there.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. I'm having a moment.
I know, right? I am too, because, you know, I hear it and I'm like, wait a minute. I've heard of that organization.
Oh my God.
So you started your arts career at 8.
So my Free Press did a story on Young Artists and Company. My mother faithfully read the Free Press. and saw it. I had already established myself, or at least announced, my 7-year-old self announced to my parents, I'm an artist. So when I turned 8, somewhere between 8 and 9, she saw that article in the Free Press, and my both my parents hopped on it and was like, okay, this is her lane. And I started drawing, you know, having lessons in young artists in the company. So that kicked off my visual arts career. And then through, I went to Henry Ford High School on the West Side, and there was a program there. Once I became a sophomore, didn't graduate from there, but once I became a sophomore, I was able to go to Crockett Vocational Technical School. They had all of the voc tech programs, and visual arts was one of them. I still have my smock, my 10th grade smock from Crockett. Those were two very pivotal moments for me as an arts educator. And so I was trained at Eastern Michigan University to be a teacher and got my BFA there. And then I went away to D.C. and Maryland to teach, but decided very pointedly to come back to Detroit. And all of that rearing, that training that I received as an 8-year-old and through my high school experience, I wanted to give that back. I wanted to find other little 8-year-old brown girls like myself.
You better talk.
To provide that same. I felt like it was my job to embody Mrs. Ivory as, you know, in receiving the kind of education that I did, the visual arts education. I was like, that's how I want to teach my students. And I did. Mm. And all the things she taught me, I was like, I remember when she made us not use erasers. We couldn't. But the most important thing was that I saw myself in her, that, you know, this beautiful brown-skinned woman, you know, my 8-year-old self, and she is a phenomenal artist. And it was just really transformational, really impactful. And
Miss Ivory.
Miss Ivory.
Miss Ivory.
Yes. Mrs. Joyce Ivory. Ivory.
Joyce Ivory. Yeah.
And you say her name.
Yes.
Yeah. She's and Nafisa, you know, as a professor, her focus was in culturally responsive pedagogy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you can see how we both come to this work as practitioners.
Yes.
Her as a classroom teacher, me as a youth arts nonprofit leader. Mm-hmm. But you know, what we care about right now, our days, her days of teaching, my days of directing young people is over.
And
now it's about supporting the organizations ecosystem. And the people and ultimately the young people to be able to really excel.
I'd like to honor another thing about you, Rick, because as a man, an artist who is not black, you always have found a way to honor and elevate black artists in leadership roles. In your choir, I don't remember, what's the name of your choir directors? The first one.
Ken Anderson,
yes. You've just done that. And I think that's very special. And even now with Nafisa, and when you handed off the baton, you handed it to a black woman. So many times you don't see that happening. And so I think that really is special. And appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, y'all, it's time for Hot Takes, where we run down some of the week's top headlines in the city of Detroit. So for Hot Takes, fake social media rendering of Detroit sign set expectations too high, Duggan says. Detroit sign, described as a Hollywood-style adornment along Interstate I-94, has drawn mixed reviews from people who have seen it. But Mayor Mike Duggan says they were misled by an unofficial social media post. If y'all can hear me smiling big as I read this, this is hilarious to me. As of Thursday, Duggan said he had not yet driven by the sign, but accused a fake social media post for setting flawed expectations of the installation along the highway ahead of the NFL draft. The mayor saw the post, thinking General Services Director Brad Dick was planning a similar installation, until Dick told him it was a fake post, Duggan said Thursday at the NFL draft news conference. Here's the quote. Brad is our tremendously ambitious general services director. And he said, I want to do something besides the boring welcome to Detroit sign. Duggan said, I said, sure, Brad. I'm more interested in getting the trash up off the freeway. I didn't really focus on the sign until about a month ago. I saw a post on Instagram of a spectacular Hollywood sign. I called Brad. I said, that's terrific. I had no idea you were thinking that big. He says, that's a fake post. Some guy on Instagram just made it up. Duggan said he told Dick that he would have a problem with people thinking it would be the real Detroit sign. He says, no, Mayor, you don't really understand social media. People don't confuse fake posts with real posts, Duggan said. Well, yesterday I get an email from some procurement director in New Jersey demanding I fire the procurement staff because they didn't get delivered the sign that we ordered. The quote goes on to say, they're circulating the fake post claiming the city of Detroit didn't deliver what we promised. So I guess Brad will learn about being ambitious and trying to do something special. But I applaud the ambition of doing something a cut above the boring side. And I think if he hadn't been judged against that extraordinary artist on Instagram, he would have done just fine. This is hilarious.
I mean, I was really offended when I read that, to be honest with you. First of all, Brad Dick is not the general services director.
He's executive.
The chief operating officer for the city of Detroit. For the mayor to call him out in that way and repeatedly make him sound incompetent or overly ambitious and out of touch is offensive to anybody who really considers themselves to be a leader of people. You don't do that. Sometimes you just got to take the hit when a staff person messes up, and you might have some words behind closed doors, but to open this man who has only ever been the most consistently supportive, defending staff people in the city of Detroit to ridicule and criticism is outrageous to me. First of all, if he did not know what the sign was going to look like, that seems negligent when you are running up to the NFL draft. Secondly, if he heard all of that criticism and didn't drive by, I drove by and I'm not the mayor. I wanted to know what it looked like. Of course, I came, you know, at home at night from the airport when all of this news broke. But then the next day I actually came and drove by again so I could see for myself. And actually, when you're looking at it, the angles of this sign, because it's in a sort of a curve and also on a hill, look a lot different than they do in those pictures. So you also have to put things in context that the picture, that sign is not meant for people to take aerial photos looking down on it. But even if he didn't like it, and this is the second time there's been some type of public installation in the city that the mayor has washed his hands of. The first one was the murals downtown. And then Rochelle Riley was hung out to dry, and
Antoine Bryant.
Because there were some articles about her, and then they pushed it to Antoine Bryant. But my thing is this: when you're the mayor of a big city and a decision is made, it's on you. And I promise you, if there's a decision made by ECN that is not a decision that I like, it's on me, whether or not I knew about it, because I should have, especially if it's important. And if anybody criticized something, my staff, and they were open up to ridicule, I certainly would have driven by and come up with a way to help them salvage their reputations. Because I just think that's not great leadership. I don't think the sign is that bad. I know people are saying we should have had public artists involved. It's a sign. It's letters. Why they call it Hollywood style, I don't know, because that kind of created false expectations, but it's a sign. There's plenty of opportunities for public art. We don't want people posing on the side of the freeway with a sign. So that's my editorial, and I'm sticking with it.
I think it's absolutely hilarious. I think the way Duggan handled the reporter's question at this press conference was funny, and I know that he and Brad Dick have a great relationship, and if you go back to the presser, you know, Duggan is sort of jokingly having a good time with it. But, you know, my biggest to do isn't about the sign, because I too actually don't think the sign is that bad. And I understand Donna's point about leadership and taking responsibility. I mean, this is, we've had Mayor Duggan now for some years. We know the things that he likes to take responsibility for and the things that he likes to wash his hands with, especially when they're scandal written. The thing that is extraordinary to me is the amount of money we spent on this thing. That's the price tag is something that has my wheels turning a little bit. We're talking about almost $450,000 for this sign out of that were capital funds from the city budget. I think that did we need a sign? No. Could we have spent and put $450,000 into, I don't know, maybe youth arts? And maybe the young people could have done something. It's right. Just like, you know, and so I would have liked to see that money. And actually the murals money, which was another $150,000 that didn't go through a procurement process that we are still waiting on Freedom of Information Act request to come back because they put a price tag on that at around $17,000. Just something crazy. It's like, listen, y'all, I get it. I know everybody not going to love it. Some people do love it. I actually don't mind it. I do mind the price tag the fact that that money went to a company that's not based in the city of Detroit.
First of all, if everybody in the city of Detroit was not attacking the city for that sign, him calling Brad Dick out like that would be a joke. But when you call out somebody, you're aiming the attacks at that somebody who works for you. So that's not a great relationship to me. That is actually somebody doing something to put your staff person in harm's way and says, don't attack me. I didn't even know, attack him. And that's my issue with it. And secondly, he is the chief operating officer. You would think the mayor of Detroit would remember that when he was out there making those comments. I don't know how much it costs to create signs of that size, 8-foot things, and put them down and everything like that. So I don't know if that's a great use of funds. I know the Downtown Development Authority has been spending a whole lot of money on things I don't think make sense, which is why I want to abolish the Downtown Development Authority, because I don't think we need one. I think downtown is developed and it's siphoning money out of the rest of our community. So I don't know which capital budget those came from, but I do believe that it's very possible that you can't do those types of projects without getting some type of approval somewhere. And if not, then we need to change the approval process. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. We need to change the approval process for the city. So as much as I disagree with the way the murals were done, and as much as I disagree with even the fact that you have the sign there or whatever, and the money spent, and I agree there could be better uses. If you're the mayor of Detroit, stand in the decisions that get made by the city of Detroit and stand up for the people who work for you, especially somebody like Brad Dick, who's always defending the mayor. I think that's how we became un-Facebook friends, because when he sees my critiques, he's always defending him. And so it just was odd to me to see that happen. And yes, I do want to see more public art. I think having public art would have been better. I'm not sure that, you know, people say, well, it should have been this artist or that artist. I think that we do need more public art, and I think it needs to be requisitioned by Detroit artists.
I think it's very on brand for who Mike Duggan is. Absolutely. And who he has shown us to be. For hot takes, treat our residents with respect. Detroit ordinance looks to tackle fugitive dust. This is by Brian Allnut for Planet Detroit and Bridge Detroit. A proposed dust ordinance looks to expand protections for Detroit residents dealing with fugitive dust or dirt and other particulate matter emitted by facilities like scrapyards and concrete plants. Councilmember Gabriela Santiago Romero introduced the legislation in March, saying it would help limit industrial pollution in neighborhoods across the city. The move builds on the city's bulk storage ordinance, which the council passed in 2017 to address fugitive dust from facilities storing large amounts of material, like notorious piles of black pet coke on the Detroit River that drifted into nearby homes. But Nick Leonard, executive director of the Great Lakes Environmental Law Center, said the new ordinance may struggle to prevent fugitive dust problems without monitoring requirements that enable businesses to address issues immediately. Fugitive dust or untreated particulate matter from the roadways, construction sites, freight yards, and other facilities is associated with respiratory issues, including aggravated asthma, chronic bronchitis, emphysema, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Dust from facilities like the Fort Iron and Metal Scrapyard in Southwest Detroit and Dynamite Crushing and Recycling Concrete Crusher on the west side of the city have raised health concerns in recent years and led to demands by city and environmental groups for the city to expand its enforcement beyond bulk storage yards. The new ordinance covers businesses such as freight and truck yards, scrap yards, concrete batching plants, construction sites, high-impact manufacturing and processing facilities, and outdoor storage sites larger than 5 acres. It would require that businesses submit a fugitive dust plan with Detroit's Buildings and Safety, Engineering, and Environmental Department and allow BC to stop a business dust-generating activity until adequate plans and control measures are implemented. The ordinance includes penalties for businesses that fail to cease dust-generating activities, submit timely fugitive dust plans, or fail to implement and comply with dust control measures. These fines range from $500 to $1,000 for an initial violation and between $750 and $2,000 for subsequent violations. Donna, what say you?
I agree that we need fugitive dust controls. I also think that it's interesting to me how local municipalities are having to come up with these rules for things like trucking and dust storage and pollution, when really this should be a federal policy. We need a stronger EPA. One of the challenges we have right now is every state is competing for the exact same businesses to locate in their vicinity. And I was thinking, because I was speaking at a conference on climate on Friday, I was thinking about this on the way up there, that whenever people impose states' rights or local rights, it's never good for people. It's always good for companies, right? Like, we have the states have the right to enslave people, or states have the right to take a woman's right to choose, or states have the right to pollute. Like, we know what's good for human health. And it would be really great if we had some national standards here. I do think BC could do a better job. I really wish that the city council would also come up with a truck ordinance and some rezoning that would permit some changes. I think that we need to stop allowing for rerouting them and those trucks, and stop idling inside of communities where people live. We need to look at zoning and the allowance for, polluting activities to take place adjacent to neighborhoods, which the M4 zone is supposed to restrict. So I support that. I think it's ridiculous that Coke is allowed to, the Coke brothers are allowed to store their Coke dust on our waterways, because it's not just the air, but it's the water. I mean, we just got to do a better job as a society pretending like we care about the environment and environmental health. And the final thing I'll say about this is, as I talk to a lot of people who are talking about climate change, and they say, we've got to do a better job protecting our climate, I always think we have to do a better job protecting our people. And when our people are safe, our climate will also be okay. So I look forward to some changes in legislation, but I hope we have like a whole packet of changes that we look at cumulative impact, and we don't just try a little bit of this and a little bit of that, because people who live in frontline communities are exposed to all of it.
All right, y'all, we're going to take a quick break. More of Authentically Detroit when we come back.
Bridge Detroit is your news and engagement platform that is telling the stories of Detroiters rooted by community priorities. Started in 2020 by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Stephen Henderson, the newsroom has already established its footing as the go-to source for hyper-local perspectives that ask the hard questions, brings accountability, and searches out real solutions. It's free to become a member of this award-winning news organization. Visit bridgedetroit.com today to sign up to receive the news delivered right to your inbox. Bridge Detroit. By Detroiters, for Detroiters.
Have you always dreamed of being on the airwaves? Well, the Detroit Eastside Engage Podcast Network, or DEEP for short, is here to make that dream a reality. Located inside the Stoudemire, the DEEP Network offers studio space and production staff to help get your podcast idea off the ground. Doesn't take a whole lot of work to get started. Just visit the Authentically Detroit page at ecn-detroit.org or call Sarah at 313-948-0344.
Welcome back, everyone. Detroit Excellence in Youth Arts, in collaboration with the newly formed Detroit Youth Arts Provider Network, announced the Launch Awards, offering a boost for creative youth in Detroit. These microgrants are tailored to fill gaps in artistic development, furthering DEA's commitment to making arts education more equitable and accessible for all Detroit's young creatives. With a yearly budget of $40,000, the Launch Awards will distribute $10,000 every quarter in March, June, September, and December of 2024. Eligible youths ages 11 to 19 have the chance to apply up to 4 times a year with awards up to $250 each time, potentially amassing $1,000 over the year to foster their artistic journeys and cover expenses such as art supplies, dance shoes, instrument repairs, etc. And my first question is, where were you almost 20 years ago when I was a young artist going to Detroit School of Arts who needed all of this stuff and all of this support? Where were you?
You get it. Right, right. We talked to many organizations. So we have this, as you mentioned, the Detroit Youth Arts Provider Network. That is 44 different youth arts providers. Not all youth arts organizations. Some are social service. Some are sports. Programs. Some are programs. Mm-hmm. But they're all providing really high quality youth arts. And we asked, among other things, what are the barriers? And one of them that came up was, it's the small expenses. You might be able to get into a program free or have a full scholarship, but if you can't buy the dance shoes, if you can't
get there.
If we had so many kids who applied who were fashion designers, mm-hmm. and they were like, I can't buy the really good fabric. Mm-hmm. So we had our first round. I'm thrilled to say we gave out microgrants to 42 young people from 21 different schools throughout Detroit. Yes, DSA. I'm looking at Orlando, the DSA grad. They probably had the most, but Western International, schools from all around Detroit had representatives. And the cool thing was the diversity of it. It was visual artists. It was dancers. It was tattoo artists. Mm-hmm. It was anime.
Nail artists. We had 70 applicants total. So I think that was another big thing, and hopefully we'll have more in this next round.
I'm sure you will. Yeah.
And we're always looking for individuals or anybody who wants to support this effort, because we'd like to see this grow from 40,000 to double that for the next year.
I think that's amazing. I'm just trying to imagine you. You said you started when you were 8.
I did.
Imagine being 11 years old and getting $250. What a way to tell you're a real artist. Mm-hmm. When somebody actually gives you money, I think that that's just a way of honoring our young people.
I don't think that people even recognize how expensive art supplies is. I'm a visual artist. I'm a painter and drawer. And I remember having that list of supplies that my parents had to, we had to go and get. We had to get the tackle box and we had to get the this and that. And that, way back in the day, I'm kind of old. All of that stuff added up. And so it's even more now. It's even more significant now that we have these opportunities to fill these gaps.
But I also think what you're saying, though, is so powerful, Donna, about what it says to a young person to get paid mm-hmm. to do their art.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the value. I think every professional artist can tell you the first time they got paid.
Yeah.
And yes, there are some contests out there, but we felt that micro grants were more important to reach as many young people as possible that are doing serious work. We know $250 a quarter isn't going to move some mountains, mm-hmm. but it's about getting the money in the hands.
But also removing the organizational barrier. Yeah. You guys are paying young folks directly. So how did you figure out that was the model that you wanted to use?
Well, let me put a framework around how we even acquired the money to be able to give out. So Gardner White did a fundraiser. There was a artist, his name is Mike Hahn, who created some artwork for Gardner White that was auctioned off at this big event that they had. And he specifically said that he wanted the proceeds from this auction to go to Detroit Young Artist Entrepreneurs. He was very specific in identifying that. So Gardner White was like, okay. How do we do that? How do we get this money to young Detroit artists? And so they reached out to two different entities, neither of which had the vehicle to be able to do that. And so the second one, I don't know
if I can. Who can tell?
I can. Okay. So the first was DPSCD. They had reached out to Dania. They were like, yeah, no, we don't do that. And then the next was they had reached out to Skillman. And Skillman was like, yeah, no, we don't do that. However, there's this group called DEA that might be able to help you facilitate that. And so Gardner White representatives contacted us, and we were like, this is exactly why we were set up, to be able to receive these outside funds that no one organization could receive, or a school district, or a funder, a funding entity. And so with that, we had a conversation, met with the artist, met with Gardner White. How do you want this? What do you want this to look like? How do you want us to distribute? And so we had these ongoing conversations. And then we ended up engaging the Detroit Youth Arts Providers Network, because we wanted this to be a community designed, you know, application process. It wasn't the Rick and Nafisa show. We weren't picking who was going to get these awards. And that's mm-hmm. where the whole structure came from. We had this amount of money, this $40,000. Okay, we'll break that up over the course of the year. And this is the number of times young people can apply and how much they can get. So it was a very... it's very centered around the community making this decision. There was a community panel that was created in order to read through the applications and score. So it was open to every 11 to 19 year old in the city of Detroit, including Highland Park and Hamtramck, and young people who were do not live in Detroit but go to school in Detroit. Because we see those young people as, even though they don't live here, that they have a stake in, you know, Detroit youth arts scene because they go to school here full time.
Well, that's really exciting, you know. Yeah. I love the fact that you incorporate things like nail art, because I think that's very culturally competent to really say, this is how young people express themselves, and it doesn't have to be in these traditional kind of disciplines. Yep. But the other thing is, it's important for our listeners to understand, I think, the significance of teaching a young person art is not just that you're creating great artists, but that you're actually building self-confidence. And some of those that those skill sets translate into other things. Rick, I know you wanted to say something. So when you're done, can you guys talk about changes that you see in young people as they become artists?
Whatever I was saying, it's not as important as that. So I'm going to come. No, absolutely. I mean, I think that Nafisa and I feel strongly that this isn't about, as much as it's about arts, it's about young people and their development as people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wish there was a word we could create, youth arts, make it a new word, take out the space, like they have almond milk is a new word, like youth arts. Because when you say arts, it doesn't cover everything that youth arts does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Youth arts is inherently educational. It's inherently youth development. Mm-hmm. It's inherently emotional, social-emotional learning. It's health. We are very excited that there's going to be an op-ed piece coming up soon, knock on wood, from some major people in the health industry saying that the lack of arts for young people, arts inequity, is a public health issue because they see the health benefits of the arts. And so when young people in Detroit are not getting their fair share of the arts, which at a place like Detroit, you know, that doesn't make any sense. That's our legacy in more than just Motown. When they're not getting that same level of arts, it's not just, we're not going to create as many artists.
Right.
It's the fundamental benefits that young people get from the arts that Detroit kids are not getting. We just finished a mapping study with Data-Driven Detroit, D3, looking at where youth arts are and where they aren't and who's going to youth arts. It was shocking. There were 52 different youth arts programs, and we looked at the zip codes of the kids that were attending those. Just over 50% were coming from outside of the city.
Right.
Why? Because they have the mobility to get into the city to take advantage of these opportunities when kids that may live close to them aren't.
Yeah.
So we found five different zip codes that we're calling Youth Arts Opportunity Zip Codes. They have the lowest amount of opportunities in their neighborhood. They have the lowest participation in citywide programs like Mosaic, like Detroit Windsor Dance Academy. But also, these five zip codes have the greatest density of young people of any five zip codes in the city. Mm-hmm. So if we can, we feel like strategically, policy-wise, funding-wise, if we can invest in these five zip codes, doesn't mean there isn't need across the board.
No,
it could exponentially turn around the equity
issue. My husband, as I mentioned, is an artist, right? And he was a kid, grew up in Detroit, and then moved to Pontiac. And through art, he was not a straight-A student, but through art, he was able to be the first person in his family, I'm sorry for saying this, Kevin, to graduate from high school and then college.
Mm-hmm.
That became the mechanism, the medium by which he was able to see himself as having capacity, the way he got the kind of adult affirmation and other things. And so when I look at that, and my mom was an artist, and I used to really, just seeing how important art was for her self-expression, I used to think I wasn't artistic, and then somebody said, well, you write, and my writing might be, have my way of expressing itself. Because, I think everybody has the capacity to create. In our society, we say, these are the creative people, and these are the artistic people, and we kind of, silo them and don't understand that all human beings have the capacity for art. But I have seen it personally, worked with young people personally who I've seen change their life trajectory through art. Mm-hmm. Orlando's an artist. Mm-hmm. And to what extent was your engagement in art helping you to get where you are right now today?
I mean, it's invaluable. I mean, the fact that I'm able to stand on any stage and construct a complete sentence without being scared is testament to the fact that, artists and youth development is paramount toward building self-confidence, toward getting over yourself, toward being able to harness those nerves into something positive, but also paramount in me having an outlet of creativity to further express myself, right? And to explore pieces and parts of myself that I normally wouldn't be able to explore. I had a family who invested in that and gave me a platform at home, and then I went to school and I still had that platform. I mean, even as a journalist, we start with a blank sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm.
We start from nothing, and then we populate that, right? And so that ability to create, that ability to tap into that genius that was developed by geniuses like Dr. Denise Davis Cotton, like a Marsha Sakwa, like so many people in the community, right, has been paramount toward my success. And I still use it. I still use that training to this day. You guys are hearing me on a podcast. I still use that training to make sure that I'm able to articulate the story, inflection points, my voice work, like all of that stuff. It was taught to me. It was taught. It was honed in me. And so, what I'm thinking about, the question I want to ask you, Nafisa and Rick, is, the absence of this conversation within the policy space, and I'm sort of seeing your organization as an intermediary, number one, to deliver funding support directly, but also to look at different, to survey and use these data sets to influence policy. What is the policy agenda for DEA?
That's a great question. We have identified the fact that the data that we're collecting, we want the entire community to be able to use in some capacity, right? We want the creative youth development organizations to allow what we've done to inform, where they position themselves, the opportunity for them to create, additional capacity for themselves. We want this data to inform the funding community so that they, we think very strongly that through Collective Impact, because we have a 44-member network, and because we're able to bring so many people together, that our voice is much stronger than if we were to individually go to, you know, a funder to say, this is actually what I need. When we have 44 different organizations coming together as a collective to say, this is what we need, that affects change. And that's what we've been trying to help people understand through this process.
And you're right about the policy vacuum. And the reason is there's nobody who can take that on.
Right.
The schools can't really take the policy on. The individual organizations don't have the capacity to take it on. So we were just having a wonderful conversation a couple hours ago with the person who does what Daya does, but in Chicago. Yeah. And she was talking about the way they were able through policy to get the arts considered a core member, core part of the curriculum, which it is not right now in Michigan or Detroit. You know, how that changes things, that they were even able to get funders to enhance the support of the arts in the schools. By so there's so many different ways, but I think the part of what we have to do besides policy is advocacy, and not just advocacy for policy changes, but advocacy for youth arts. What you were saying, what we were saying just now, that's not what most people understand. They don't understand that the arts is that transformational and makes that much of an impact on all these different parts of your lives. If we can convince them of that, then more funding for the arts, more access for the arts.
Right before we started this conversation, I mentioned we had a conversation with the Kennedy Center, and they identified arts education as a civil rights issue, or lack of arts education as a civil rights issue. And that was so powerful to me, because I think I don't think most people don't see it that way. Like, people don't see it as that necessary for young people to involve themselves in, and they see the arts as an aside. And we want people to start to think about and see and incorporate the arts as, this is the lens in which we teach, in the same way that I teach culturally responsive pedagogy in the intersection of arts education to, you know, university students, that that arts education becomes, you know, that you know, how it, the way in which we teach.
Well, you know, I think we have to re-educate parents, right?
Absolutely.
Because parents are the ones who can make the demands. Parents vote for the politicians. And we have been miseducated to believe that the 3 R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, are the only things you have to worry about.
That's absolutely right.
And as we have continued to narrow, as we've continued to narrow our focus in those areas, academic achievement in the Michigan has declined. It's not like, oh, we're going to have 4-hour math classes has led to increased math scores. Kids check out. And the other thing is that a lot of young people who are not performing that highly in those classes lose self-confidence. And so using different techniques to get young people connected to the work is so important. And understanding how the brain works is so important. If we start with the parents, I think a lot of times we try to start with politicians, and they aren't really focused on actual data. About 20 years ago, when I was at Vanguard Community Development Corporation, we got a grant for an arts program for youth. And I remember getting into an argument with a funder who asked me what was more important, art or math. And I would not choose. And she was so frustrated with me. And I said, but if kids do well in art, they can do well in math. It's so important. They're connected. And, you know, there was just no understanding of that. So it's very exciting to me that you're doing this. And I think also I'm really interested in figuring out how organizations like ECN can partner with you to infuse more art into the work we're doing with young
people. That's such a good point, though, Donna. I remember the reason why I love history is because I was able to tap into my artist's mind and see it as movies, right? I learned history and I remembered it because it was like a flow of film that I was able to memorize and understand and digest in my artist's mind little way. You know, but that tapping into that third eye, that creative eye that we talk about in the arts, is paramount. But you have to be taught how to do that. You have to be taught how to hone in on that. It's such a great
given the space
or even to do that because really, you know, my son got his bachelor's in business administration. He was only sports and math and econ. And his senior year of college, he was asked to help out with a fashion show by being the business manager for the fashion show. And he was like, wow, I'm really enjoying this fashion, art, stuff like that. And so he completely changed. So he still does financial. He's still a financial analyst, but he also makes movies. And he taught himself. He, you know, he spent his own money teaching himself, working with people, learning on the job. So even though he didn't have that exposure, now his high school did have a film class, but he knew how to do editing on an iPhone. And now he's built this group of people he's working with, and he's immersed himself in this artistic community. So here you have this kid who was always told that his left brain was the most important part of his brain, who finds out that he's got this amazing, beautiful right brain. And that we're all part of that. And that's our humanity, right? I think that's our culture, is to break us down.
Absolutely. I think that the concept of taking STEM and making it STEAM is actually really powerful. And it's not used that way. It's like, oh, let's add the arts. Yeah. You know, let me feel bad the art. No. The way the creativity of the arts feeds science, feeds math, feeds all these things. Mm-hmm. I remember there was a famous executive from General Motors that was like, I don't want guys that have gone to business schools. I want BFAs. I want bachelors of fine arts working for me because they're going to be the creative folks. That you made me think about one young man in Mosaic who struggled in his academics the whole time, you know, but the arts was what kept him there. And he was one of the few Mosaic kids that didn't go to college right away. And thanks to Dime, shout out to Dime, there was a place that he could go and get his undergrad. He just got his master's degree in at NYU.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And you think about that, this is not a kid that traditional school would have served. It was the arts.
I think it's important to acknowledge that we feel very strongly that the arts has the opportunity to change young people's trajectory. And we don't think that it is meant to just develop the actor.
Right.
Or just develop the painter or the that singular musician, right? Because, I mean, just like in sports, we know that there's only one quarterback, right?
You know,
it's very few and far between that young people get selected for those kinds of things. But what we know is that, and Rick can attest to this, for those 1 to 3 actors that's in front of the camera, there's 50 behind. There's so many more that are a part of sound, a part of lights, a part of managing the money, right? There's so many more people that this has, the arts has the opportunity to touch and affect change. I think that's what speaks so strongly to me that this is a civil rights issue. That we are limiting opportunity by not engaging young people in the way that they should be engaged, because they can choose. Like the other thing I feel like we haven't said is that the arts helps people define their voice. And it defines as they grow through the arts and they are able to define their voice, they can say where they want to go.
Right.
They have the power now to say, I want to do X, Y, and Z, and I can think creatively. I have the skill to think critically about how I want to engage whatever industry. The arts supports the development in young people being able to navigate any industry.
Right. Defines their voice, but also defines the time, right? Mm-hmm. We often look to pieces of art to provide a retrospective or reflective view of whatever is going on at a particular time.
Right. You know, can you imagine a revolution without arts?
Right.
Arts are always part of raising consciousness.
Absolutely.
Every repressive government, the first thing they've done is tried to get rid of the arts.
So Michigan, state of Michigan, When we don't have arts in schools, we're being repressive. But one of the things that I think about is I was always like, I've never been a visual artist. My mom is a great artist, great interior designer, great cook, all of that. And I've always been very not a good artist. And I didn't think of myself as an artist, but I always wrote poetry. I love writing. I love creative writing. And I didn't think of that as art. And so I think we all are gifted differently artistically, but when we tap into our creative expression, it doesn't matter what your gift is, find it. You know, I love public speaking. I love writing. I love things that I'm good at, that were invested in me. And we all have that part of ourselves that is creative and can express. The other thing I want to say is that I think art is what takes you closest to your spiritual, right? Mm-hmm. So through art, that's the spiritual piece. When I look at, you know, mind, body, and soul, the soul is art, right? The soul is not your math. Although, you know, math requires, it's a very much mind, right? Mm-hmm. But the soul is sits in that space. And it has helped. Art is also the way that people who are oppressed have been able to be resilient, who have been able to do some things. So coming from, you can see, I'm such a big advocate for art, despite the fact that I've never really considered myself an artist, but I've seen it transform lives.
Back to the micro grants, the launch awards, we define that as for a creative Detroit youth. Because for some kids, they don't see themselves as an artist. Some, like Nafisa, saw herself as an artist at 8. I think I saw myself as an actor when I was 4. But for some, it's about being creative. So we said, people said, well, what art counts for this? And we said, make your argument. Make your argument of why this is creative.
Yep.
And that's why we have the nail artist who got a micro grant and the others who are doing things that we wouldn't normally consider the arts. Mm-hmm. It's ultimately about creativity, and creativity starts with the word create. Like you were saying, you start with something blank and you create something, and that process is powerful, whether you consider yourself an artist or not.
It's important, too, for us to not define that. Like, we have always lived, when I got my BFA, all of my, you know, art history classes and everything that I took centered around the quote-unquote masters and the classical, you know, works of art from visual artists, right? So we see that in music. We see that in dance, right? Mm-hmm. That's why Misty Copeland is a thing. Like, she's such a big deal because she is not your traditional ballerina, right? Whatever traditional means.
White supremacy.
Exactly. And so So it's important for us to as an initiative to move away from that kind of defining of the arts and allowing young people to define that for themselves, because I don't feel like as a society we have ever really allowed people to do that, which is why cultural art representation in the arts from Native American to Black to, you know, Mexican American, like we have never allowed that to become quote unquote mainstream.
Right. We're told to sort of put that in a box somewhere.
Yeah, separate.
And so I was at this one conference and we had to get up and sing. And I was really irritated. They were like, okay, so we're going to have this great surprise. Everybody stand up and sing. And I was like, I don't sing. I don't want to do this, right? So I got up with everybody else, and then we had somebody lead us in song, and we all started singing together, and it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I felt light. And I was like, wow, we should do this in our meetings. We should get people connected, because you have these, you know, soul connections that you can't even explain, that people who are not singers, right, can enjoy just like everybody else. So I think that if we allow ourselves to be impacted by art in all that we do, and not just put it in its own little cubbyhole, but understand that we create everywhere, it would just be really great.
Yeah.
And another thing related to that with the micro grants is there's a sense that artists are these rare individuals, and you either have this talent or you don't.
You don't. Yeah.
And we don't believe that. Well, we believe that. And so for this grant, for these micro grants, we say we are not just looking for the best of the best. Mm-hmm. What we're looking for is your passion. Mm-hmm. Do you want to grow as an artist? Do you want to develop as an artist? We're not judging you. Because I think sometimes, I remember Mosaic Youth Theater of Detroit, we used to have this school tour, and we did, took this rough show out, and we got so many kids that came and to join Mosaic because they saw us at their school. And then when it got impossible to do that because of attendance rules and stuff like that, we just did a matinee, and they all came to the DIA to see us. And we didn't get the same amount of kids who wanted to join Mosaic from that. And I finally figured it out is because the show that they saw at the end was the perfect show. It was not the rough show. It was the perfect show. Everyone's in perfect costumes. And I bet a lot of those kids went in there and said, oh, that's not me. Yeah. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. That these are these special, unique individuals.
Yeah.
And so it's important for us to not say some people are artists or some people aren't, right. But that arts is something that every young person can develop. Not every young person's going to choose it.
Right.
But if you've got that passion for it, you know, there's a place for you.
And going back to schools, that's why arts in schools is so important. Because I didn't have art classes in my school. I actually, you know, when I went to fifth grade, we went to a Catholic school, and that was all reading, writing, and arithmetic there. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have an art class. There was mm-hmm. nobody helping me develop it. And so I kind of stayed stuck with this idea, I can't do this, yeah. right? But I think if people learn it early enough in schools and are encouraged to express themselves and be creative early enough in schools, whether it's music or dance or, you know, some type of visual arts, I think that you can really change the world, really, or change our community because, you know, our young people need an outlet. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are hurt. A lot of people are grieving. We've talked about all of the mental health issues that our young people are dealing with. We actually have an art therapy class here for adults where we're helping people work through their emotional burdens through art. But I just imagine if young people were able to create as opposed to talk therapy or read this book, mm-hmm, right? Because mm-hmm. that doesn't work for everybody.
I taught visual arts for 13 years, and I had students who expressed very plainly to me that the only reason why they came to school was to come to my class. So I have firsthand witnessed the power that allowing students the opportunity to share their gifts and to develop in that way, you know, what that holds for young people. I want to take us back to the Launch Awards and remind people that the second round applications have.
That was my last question.
Okay.
How can youth apply for the microgrant?
Absolutely. So the second round just opened on April 12th. And it closes. I just want to really point out the deadline. We really want people to get their applications, and it closes on May 2nd.
Is it a digital application?
Yes, it is. So
it's all online.
All online. ConnectDetroit.org/launchawards.
Slash DEA.
Do you have?
Wait. Do it again. Say that again. Yeah.
ConnectDetroit.org/DEA, DEYA.
Do you have a flyer for this?
We have a digital flyer.
Okay, if you can send us your flyer, we can put it on our Facebook page.
Oh, great.
Okay. ECN can send it out to our community and put it on all of our socials so that people can see it.
And the application, we worked with the network and young people to make sure that the application was not
cumbersome,
laborious, too much.
Yep.
You really just have to be able to express yourself and express why this is important and why you think that these funds will help you develop.
And very important, you must get a recommendation from an adult.
Not related to you.
Yes. All right. Yes, from a teacher, a mentor, one of your arts folks.
Someone who knows your passion.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
ConnectDetroit.org/DEA, which is DEYA. All right, y'all. If you have topics that you want discussed on Authentically Detroit, you can hit us up on our socials at Authentically Detroit on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or you can email us at AuthenticallyDetroit@gmail.com. All right, it is time for shout outs, our favorite segment of the show. Donna, you have any shout outs?
I do.
She was prepared.
I want to shout out Ruha Benjamin. Her commencement speak at Spelman.
Yep.
It was amazing, brilliant,
brave faces in high places.
She just said so many things. It's really hard. Oh my gosh. It was brilliant. If you haven't, just Google Ruha Benjamin, because her name is R-U-H-A. But she wrote a book, Race After Technology, Abolitionist Tools for the New Jim Code. And I swear, this is one of the best books that helped me understand how racism is codified in a lot of our technology right now. And if we're not careful, we can take away the person and embedded in technology that reproduces the same kind of injustice. Mm-hmm. But she got up there and ended, and she was so brave. So I want to shout her out. I also want to shout out Crane's Detroit Business, which published an editorial for me about Detroit needing more new green infrastructure. I was really excited to be able to make that case. And then I want to shout out the new director of sustainability, Tafira Rushton, who stepped into that role after Jack Akinosotu left. She was actually hired as the first director of urban agriculture for the city of Detroit, and she's now the director of urban sustainability. We met this morning, and I think Detroit got it right with her appointment.
All right, Rick and Nafisa, do you have any shout-outs? Anybody want to shout-out?
I'm just looking at you, and I thought, Rosie DeSantos, who you know her mother and a Mosaic alum, is a back in Detroit doing a professional production, and it's just so exciting. You mentioned before DR from Detroit, the number of young people who are making incredible strides on Broadway, on television, in all art forms, who all come from Detroit, and we got to raise them all up.
You know, that I have a funny Rosie story. Rosie was in middle school.
No way.
And I was the director of Warren Connor's Eastside Community Network summer program. I would come back and implement the summer program. And one of the things that I started was a theater club. And Rosie decided that she wanted to join the theater club. And I was teaching them Shakespeare and Baldwin. We were having a good time. Rosie went out for the role of Romeo and Romeo and Juliet. And she was so magnificent. I didn't know that that's where the bug got her.
There you go.
A summer youth program on the East Side, mm-hmm. and she's a NYU graduate now. It's so dope.
I hate to bring it all back together,
yeah.
But that's why we say it's about youth arts providers.
Yeah.
Where does that happen? At a summer camp?
Yep.
At a community development organization? It's that spark.
Yeah.
I want to shout out, first of all, I gotta shout out Mrs. Joyce Ivory for being the person who saw me and developed my love for visual arts. I gotta shout out to the State Arts Council, of which I am a newly appointed member by Governor Gretchen Whitmer. The State Arts Council provides so many opportunities for arts educators and arts providers through their granting process, and there's so much money available. And it has become my mission to get specifically Detroit arts educators involved in accessing those funds because they don't. It's been my experience with the council. I want to shout out executive director of the National Guild for Community Arts Education, who is centered in Washington, D.C. She works out of D.C. Her name is Quanice Floyd. And this is another one I think people should look up. Remember that name, Quanice Floyd. The National Guild for Community Arts Education is just doing incredible national work in terms of advocacy and policy. This is one of the groups that we are following very closely because they are helping us in creating a blueprint for defining why the arts are so important and how we then use what we know to affect policy change. So, you know, and then, of course, I got to shout out my husband and my babies. My daughter Nadia and my son Nikki 3, and my husband Nick for just being incredible supporters of the work that Rick and I are doing, and all around just awesome human beings.
I love that. Aww. I love that. Shout outs. You know what? I know who I want to shout out. I want to shout out my brother from another mother who's here in Detroit from New Orleans this week. Dejon Jordan from Broad Community Connections, based in Detroit, is here doing some work with the Detroit 21, or is it 25?
It's 24 of us, but we're still Detroit 21.
The Detroit 21 this week. They did a field trip down to New Orleans, and my brother is up here. So I know he got the full schedule. Hopefully I get a chance to hang out with him a little bit this week. Shout out to Dejon. We got to figure out how to get an interview with him, too, while he's here. That'll be super fun. But all right. We good? Yes. We're good. We're good. Okay, check
Thank
out
you guys.
connectdetroit.org/DEYA, D-E-Y-A, to apply for your micro grant today. Yes. That's going to do it for this episode of Authentically Detroit. We will see you next time.
All right. That was fun.
That was fun.